Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. So this week, President Barack Obama rolled up his sleeves, shed his tie, and boarded a big black bus that rolled through the American heartland.
Speaking in Peosta, Iowa, Mr. Obama said the economic recovery is coming, but that it won't start in Washington, D.C.
It's going to start on the ranch lands and farms of the Midwest, in the workshops of basement inventors, in the storefronts of small business owners.
And maybe here in New England, with a national unemployment rate still above 9%, the president's message was straightforward. The country needs jobs, and small businesses can create them.
Today, Mr. Obama proposed a rural jobs plan that would help small businesses get access to capital. The president's initiative would commit $350 million in funding from the Small Business Administration to rural small businesses over the next 5 years.
The president is focusing on small businesses for good reason. According to the government, small businesses have been responsible for two-thirds of all the new jobs created in the past 15 years. So if the country is going to create jobs, small businesses hold the key.
But the weak economy remains a big challenge. Many business owners are hesitant to add to their payroll or simply can't. So today's talker, what can the state and federal government do to help small business grow and begin putting more people back to work?
We're going to be joined by an economist who studies job growth and a couple of Massachusetts small business owners in just a minute. But first, a brief example of how the state tried and failed to create jobs in the private sector right here in Massachusetts. Kurt Nickisch is WBUR's business and technology reporter. Hi, Kurt.
Hi, Anthony.
Good of you to be here. Yeah. You've been reporting on the case of Evergreen Solar, which filed for bankruptcy just this week. Now, this was a company that not long ago represented the future of Massachusetts high tech. It was championed and coddled by the Deval Patrick administration. What happened?
Well, Evergreen basically got hit by the double whammy of lower demand and increasing supply. It makes solar panels and spent hundreds of millions of dollars of its own money to build them in Devens. Then the recession hit. Like, really hot solar markets like Spain cooled off. People weren't ordering as much. Meanwhile, the Chinese government put way more money into green energy subsidies than the U.S. did, and manufacturers there flooded the supply. So supply up, demand down. You know what happens with that. Prices crashed, and Evergreen just couldn't compete.
And filed for bankruptcy just this week. So, Kurt, we're talking about what the government can do to help companies grow jobs. Evergreen seems to be an example of how difficult that can be, right?
Yeah. They couldn't even make a go of it, even with $58 million or so in tax incentives from state government. I think Evergreen definitely shows how risky these new emerging industries are. It's where the future is, but we don't know yet exactly what the future will look like. And so getting a business from here to there is tough, especially when you're starting out with high labor and high land and high energy costs here in Massachusetts. That said, though, there is still a really vibrant manufacturing industry in the Commonwealth. It contributes something like $40 billion to the economy each year. And so I think Evergreen's failure maybe obscures the fact that, you know, this industry is really important, and it's important to keep it productive.
Important to keep it productive. And what are the challenges manufacturing companies face right now in Massachusetts?
Well, some of those challenges are common to any business in Massachusetts. Healthcare costs going up. Another worsening problem is education. The fact is, you can't compete as a manufacturer against foreign ones just on the price of labor alone. You have to be more technical, you have to be more skilled, and that demands better trained workers. Getting those workers is often a challenge.
Hmm. Well, Evergreen is a situation where the state was trying to help a local business create jobs through tax credits and subsidies. But even with that incentive, Evergreen went bankrupt. So what more can the state do to create jobs than what it did with Evergreen?
Well, the tough answer is that there's not a lot that can be done short term. You know, a tax break here or even a worker retraining program there just isn't going to make an overnight difference. So what the state has to do is look at the problems that are visible today and try to address them and maybe set yourself up for longer-term growth. That means improving science and technical education. It means developing more apprentice and vocational training programs at places like community colleges. It means keeping healthcare reform moving forward. That would go a long way towards giving, you know, those firms a reason to hire more people.
Well, thanks very much. That's Kurt Nikisch, WBUR's business and technology reporter. Kurt, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, glad to be here.
And we're talking about how to help small businesses create jobs. What do you think? Are you a small business owner? And if so, what's holding you back? What do you need from the feds or from the state government to grow your business, to help grow your business and get this job market moving? You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And joining us now are two small business owners from Massachusetts. First of all, let me introduce Kate Putnam. She's president of Package Machinery in West Springfield, and she joins us from New England Public Radio in Amherst. And Kate, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thank you for being here.
And from WRNI in Providence, Rhode Island, Mike Vanderslason. He's CEO of Vanson Leathers in Fall River, Mass. And Mike Vanderslason, welcome to you, too. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And I'm going to ask you both very briefly just a few questions just to sort of get the lay of the land about what it is you do and the kind of businesses you run. So, Kate, let me start with you. Tell me something about Package Machinery in West Springfield. What do you produce? How many people do you have working for you?
We make wrapping machinery for consumer products manufacturers. So the consumer products manufacturer buys our machine to enclose their product in a flexible wrap, paper or film, and then the consumer is able to know that the product is safely sealed when they buy it on the shelf in the store.
I see. And how many people do you have working for you?
We have 9 employees, and we use an awful lot of outside local firms to supply the parts for our machines.
I see. And do you have plans, or let me ask this question, you've got 9 employees. Did you have more employees a month ago, a year ago, 5 years ago, for example?
We actually have added 2 employees this year. I sort of went out on a limb, and I'm waiting to make sure that it pays off, but we have to continue to develop new machines. I need engineers, and I need people to build those machines, and I can't find them hanging off of trees, unfortunately.
Sure. So you've added 2 employees. So does one assume from that that your business is doing reasonably well in this tough economic climate?
No, it assumes that I'm investing in the future.
I see. And tell me about that. Tell me about the risk of that investment. I mean, how do you feel about that? How do you balance that? Why is it important to make that investment?
If you don't grow, you die.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to plan for growth, even in a rotten economy. We hunkered down in 2009 and 2010, and when we saw that our aftermarket parts business was starting to pick up in late 2009, we thought that it meant that the overall economy was going to follow it. That has not panned out exactly as we anticipated, but we have continued to pursue certain markets, and we remain hopeful that the machines that we're developing today will make our customers more efficient, make their packaging lighter and smaller, and therefore that they will want to make that investment.
And Kate, before I go over to Mike, let me just ask one more question. What's the biggest challenge you face when it comes to growing your business and hiring more workers? What's the biggest obstacle that you need to overcome?
Well, the economic uncertainty is clearly the first and foremost right now. But when I think down the road to 3 or 4 years from now, the average age of the people who build my machines is late 50s. Mm. I don't have their replacements.
Interesting. So that's an issue of education, I guess, right? And training.
It's absolutely an issue of education and training. And a certain amount of that has to be on the job. I mean, there's just so much that a school can do. And then we have to take over and we have to do the training. Hope that that employee will stick around to be actually, make money for us rather than simply an investment in the employee.
That's Kate Putnam. She's president of Package Machinery in West Springfield. And Kate, stand by, if you will. Let me come to you, Mike Vanderslason, and again, your company CEO of Vanson Leathers in Fall River, Mass. Let me start with the same kind of questions. Tell me about your company. What do you produce there?
We manufacture leather jackets and racing suits, gloves. We work in leather, we work in canvas, we work in Nomex, Corduras.
I see. And how long has Vance and Leathers been in business, and how many employees do you have?
Vance and started in 1974 in Boston, and we currently have 40 employees.
40 employees. And are you happy with that, or are you looking to add more? And let me ask you this. At the peak, how many did you employ, and how many years ago was that?
We had around 165 employees through the late 90s and in the early part of this new century. Business became a little more tough for us around 2002, 2003, we sort of been changing our structure since then.
Mm. And tough because of competition from abroad, I would imagine, when it comes to the kind of merchandise that you produce. Is that fair?
Yes, there's a lot of competition from abroad, but you also, you know, we're in the sewn products industry, and we're in the leather end of the sewn products industry, and that's been those industries and all the support functions around it. The infrastructure has been in severe decline. Hmm. We've, I think, outperformed the industry in many respects. But there's certainly shoe companies and garment companies that were very prevalent here in the 70s when I started Vance, and they've almost all disappeared.
Hmm. So you're one of the lone holdouts, it sounds like.
There are a few of us, but we're here, yeah.
Mike, well, I want to ask you the same kind of question that I asked Kate Putnam out there in West Springfield, and that is, you know, we're talking about small businesses being the key to job growth. If you're to hire more people, what would that take? What's the biggest obstacle preventing you from expanding your business, hiring more folks, and contributing to getting this economy moving again?
Well, you know, we're in Fall River, and Fall River, along with, I believe it's Lawrence, share the highest unemployment rates in the Commonwealth. Hmm. And it's in the lower 20s, according to the Boston Globe and the official numbers. I'm sure it's actually higher by several points when you count the people who aren't really looking for work. The real problem that we see isn't anything different than finding qualified people to come in who want to do the work. I would think that the problem with an employee when you bring them in is if you're paying them $12, $13 an hour, they're going home with eight, which they can't live on.
Sure.
And it's costing you as an employer $21 or $22 to pay them that eight. And so in the middle, those overheads are a real showstopper, and of course it's the usual health care, workman's comp, and unemployment and so on that makes
so you're
up
saying
that
you'd like to hire more, but it's going to be tough to find people who are qualified to do the work who are only taking home $8 an hour, and tough for you to afford the 22 an hour that you're going to have to pay.
Yes, it's hard to sell the $22 an hour labor, and it's hard for them to live on the what's left over after taxes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to, Mike and Kate, stand by. I want to bring some callers in. We've already got some backed up, and folks, we're talking about what it is that small businesses need to get going and to really light the fire under this effort to create jobs across the country. So let's take a call from Steve, who's calling from Foxborough. Hi, Steve.
Hello. For me, I own a small health club, and what I have difficulty getting is access to capital.
Right, okay.
I'm fortunate. I have very supportive angel investors, if you will, who have been very kind to me. But for me to go to a bank and get a loan, it's virtually impossible. Even when I started the club initially, when my credit score wasn't overburdened with, you know, starting a business, it was a very, very high score. Even back in 2004, to get access to capital through a SBA loan or anything with a high score, and but the caveat there is no assets or limited assets, nobody was going to give me money. And
right.
You know, now you go to a bank and you get a small business loan, virtually impossible to even get $5,000 at a very, very low rate. If you get it, it's at a high rate.
And Steve, so of course, without that capital, without that bank loan, you can't expand, you can't hire more people, you can't grow your business, right?
I would go out, yeah, so if I could get access to inexpensive capital, which I fortunately just did by one of my investors, but I had to work over a year to get that, I'd go out immediately and buy 2 to 3 new exercise machines produced here in the United States, shipped through shipping companies here in the United States, you know, carried into my club by people who deliver equipment. You know, I would go out and buy 3 new pieces of equipment.
All right. We got it, Steve. Thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it. And on that note, I want to bring in another guest, Robert Pollan. He's a professor. Robert Pollan. He's a professor of economics at UMass Amherst, where he's the co-director of the Political Economy Research Institute. And he's been looking at this issue for quite a while. Robert, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, you just heard our caller there, and I'm going to read a tweet from Somerville Local First. Tweets, to start hiring, small businesses need access to capital. We need more support for local banks and local lending. You've looked into how government can encourage small businesses to start hiring, and your take on this issue of access to capital, because this is right up your alley, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a fundamental problem. Right now, commercial banks overall in the United States are sitting on an unprecedented cash hoard of $1.4 trillion. That's $1.4 trillion. That's about 9% of total U.S. GDP. There's never been anything like it. And the reason they've gotten this money is that the Federal Reserve is essentially giving out interest-free loans to the banks. And that's okay as step one as part of a broad stimulus program. But step two has to be that the banks in turn give the money to small businesses like our last caller, Steve. And that step two is not happening. So it seems to me that the top priority now, especially given that we're not going to get any other federal stimulus in terms of government spending, is to figure out ways through which that $1.4 trillion is injected into the economy for small businesses to be able to expand and hire.
Now, Robert Pollan, I know you have a proposal along these lines, but let me just ask you about all this money, this $1.4 trillion. Back in 2008, before the meltdown, weren't we all sort of screaming at the banks because they didn't have enough capitalization? Now we're saying
That's
they've
right.
got too much.
That's right. We've gone from absolutely one extreme to absolutely the other extreme, and both extremes are bad for the economy.
Now, what about the argument, though, if you're a banker sitting on all this money, you know that it's economic rough times out there, and you're saying, well, I don't want to lend. It's kind of risky. I mean, these are bad times. I mean, aren't they just being cautious?
They're being overly cautious, and the point is public policy should create inducements for them to change their mindset. And some measures that we can think about. Number one, actually, Steve mentioned the Small Business Administration lending, and one of my thoughts is to dramatically expand the loan guarantee program available to small businesses through the existing program that we have. So if we have an excessively risky environment, if the banks think there's too much risk out there, we don't know whether it's good, well, then let's lower the level of risk. That's exactly what a loan guarantee program is supposed to be. And after all, we had loan guarantees for the big banks and the biggest corporations, and now it's time to make some provisions for small businesses. And the second proposal I would have is, look, the banks are sitting on this money. And by the way, they're also getting interest from the Federal Reserve. So let's get rid of them getting, on the one hand, getting free money, and on the second hand, getting paid to hold the money.
Yeah, so they're basically being paid, a quarter of a percentage point just for the Federal Reserve to park their money in their...
Just to park their money.
Right.
They get it for free, and then they park it and get 0.25. So let's get rid of that for starters, and then start thinking about taxing those excess reserves to change the incentives of commercial banks so that they start thinking about ways through which they see opportunities in small business lending.
Let me ask, just go back to our two small business owners, Kate Putnam and Mike Vanderslice. What you hear from Robert Pollan, is this an issue that affects either of you? Kate, let me come to you first.
To be honest, I don't want to borrow money right now. I'm very nervous about where the economy is, and I want to live very carefully within my means. So even though my customers are stretching their payables, i.e. my receivables, and my vendors want to be paid sooner, I'm trying to be very cash flow conscious, and I don't want to be increasing my exposure to banks.
Sure. And Mike Vanderslazen, what about you? Is access to capital an issue for you at all?
Yes, it is. We export about 55% of our production and have been doing that for a long time. And we've actually picked up a couple of new customers for leather jackets, one in Shanghai, one in Beijing. We have one in Taiwan. We have two in Hong Kong. And then Japan's been a steady client of ours, a number of people there for a long time. And access to capital would enable us to grow those businesses for sure.
Mm. And Robert Polin, I have a question about sort of New England and Massachusetts specifically. You have this proposal, this sort of carrot approach where you would induce or sort of encourage banks to hand over this money, essentially. Mm-hmm. To what extent does Massachusetts or New England in particular have an opportunity to benefit from a policy like this?
Well, I think Massachusetts has tremendous opportunities, in part because we have a deep and a wide financial sector. In fact, a couple of months ago, I made a presentation before some state legislators, and they asked me about this, and they said, well, what can we actually do at the state level? I said, well, let's start with the fact that the state itself has very substantial procurement power vis-a-vis the banks. That is, the state of Massachusetts is a major, maybe the major customer for the regional banks. So why don't we start with the state itself insisting that banks start looking for opportunities in the communities, and if they're not willing to do that, then the state of Massachusetts stops banking with these institutions. And in fact, the treasurer of Massachusetts has taken up this approach.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you about that. In fact, let me read a tweet from Elaine Almquist. Mass Treasurer Steve Grossman has moved much of Massachusetts' funds to local banks in order to give Massachusetts businesses more access to capital. Right. So is that happening, or does Massachusetts need to do, could Massachusetts do more to accelerate that access to capital?
To my knowledge, Massachusetts is right now the leader nationally in taking this simple but I think a potentially effective approach. So, you know, it's hard to complain because they're ahead of other states, but other states are looking into it. And the level at which this is happening in Massachusetts is still modest. It's about $100 million, to my knowledge. Hmm. So we need to move this money out because we need to see the economy recover. It's that simple.
Sure. Robert, stand by. I want to take a couple more calls, which may not be related to access to capital, but I want you to stand by. Let's go to Bob, who's calling from Walpole. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Glad to do it. What's on your mind?
Okay. I've got a real problem here with what you're talking about. I'm talking about young entrepreneurs that very inventive minds come up with a great idea, develop it, apply for a patent, obtain a patent a pending number. 6 months later, the item that they did design is coming across the sea from China.
Mm.
The government doesn't care. No one cares. We have no recourse. You go back to the patent office, they file it. We'll look into this. It's a lost cause. You're barking up against the wrong tree. There's a lot of inventive minds in this country. And the people, they get so bored, they get so frustrated. What do they do? They develop the thing themselves, and they just sell it to individual people that they know they can use it.
All right, we got it, Bob. So a call there for more patent protections. Let me try to fit one more call into this segment. Renee, who's calling from Jamaica Plain. Hi, Renee.
Hey, how you doing today, sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing excellent.
What's on your mind?
Excuse me, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, my issue is just what I have is training. I don't see that there's any small business entrepreneurship training or, you know, people teaching people who have ideas how to actually put them into making a business. You know, you have a lot of people out here who just want to go out here and get a job and look for a job, but if somebody taught them how to create a job, that might solve some of the problems.
Interesting. Renee, thanks so much for that call. Robert Poland, two calls there. I want to know if you have a reaction to any one of them. Does the Small Business Administration, for example, have anything to do toward contributing toward people learning how to run a business? I mean, are there access to is there access to that kind of that kind of expertise?
Well, there is some, and that should also be tied to the access to capital. That is, create incentives for people to go through training that will in turn enable them to get better access to capital. Now, but I just want to say about education and training, these are extremely, extremely important issues and need to be dealt with. But these are longer term, and these are things that need to be improved over the long term. But we also have to remember that we are in a short-term crisis that's distinct, and we have to get out of the recession before these long-term things are going to kick in effectively. And the access to capital, I think, is one of the main things that can be done right now to move the economy from 9% unemployment to something decent in the range of 4 or 5% where it should be.
Well, we started this segment with news about President Obama out there in Iowa talking about a proposal to commit $350 million from the Small Business Association to small rural businesses. Does this go anywhere near what you're proposing?
No. I mean, we've heard it before. $350 million, and we're talking about a $15 trillion economy. So this is not even peanuts. And we can't keep thinking about these things that are essentially just rhetorical flourishes that don't address the magnitude of the problem. What I'm proposing, and I have a study that's going to come out in a couple of weeks, is $1 trillion of the $1.4 trillion that gets reinjected back into the economy. That's the magnitude that we need to push the economy to a decent level of employment.
You know, and sometimes these numbers, they sort of make my eyes spin, but correct me if I'm wrong, because I read your paper. So $1.4 trillion before the meltdown, what, the banks had something like 200, what was the figure that, I'm just going to ask you.
They were at $20 billion in 2000. So yes, they basically carried no reserves. The banking system essentially carried zero reserves.
So they had $20 billion, and now they have
Now they have $1.4 trillion. So I said, okay, how about keep $400 billion. That should be enough.
Okay. All right. So a happy compromise somewhere there would go a long way toward helping small businesses.
Right.
Well, Robert Poland, thank you so much for joining us today and offering your expertise. We really appreciate it. That's Robert Poland. He's professor of economics and director of the Political Economy Research Institute at UMass Amherst. Also, Kate Putnam and Mike Vanderslice, and thank you both for joining us. I'm very grateful. And good luck.
Thank you.
And good luck to you both. Kate Putnam, president of Package Machinery in West Springfield, and Mike Vanderslice, and he's CEO of Vanson Leather in Fall River. We'll be back after a short break. Up next, is obesity just about too many calories and too little exercise, or do food additives play a role? We'll take a closer look in our Common Health segment. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.